Welcome to No Filter Sports. Yes, we're talking sports. It's March 30th and other things too, of course. March 30th, 2020, Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, and Denny McClain. And, you know, we're still in a one-story world about the coronavirus. We'll talk about some of the things going on in sports, although it's really, of course, off-the-field stuff. But how are you guys holding up? I tell you, I looked in the mirror this morning, and I said, I really need a haircut. Obviously, I can't get a haircut. I'm lying around the house yesterday like a slob in my sweats all day, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm actually helping my country right now, whereas last year I'd just be a lazy slob sitting around my house. It's all so counterintuitive. We're coming together by staying apart. As I said the other day, I can get marijuana easier than toilet paper. And a great story today, which I had to laugh. It's another one of the everything's so counterintuitive, is Stephen Marbury. Stephen Marbury making that the United States with 10 million Chinese masks. What an incredible story he had, being basically thrown out of the NBA in 2008, the horrible situation with the Knicks and Mike D'Antoni, who you, of course, have a lot of animosity towards, Bob, for a lot of reasons. And now Marbury.
For one reason, he's the most overrated coach in the entire history of four professional sports. That's the only reason.
Anyway, now Stephen Marbury, Stephen Marbury kind of relates a little bit to our guest today, because coming up later on, about an hour from now, maybe a little bit less, we'll see, is Drew Henson. And I tell you, Drew, when you look at Drew Henson's numbers as a prep player, he's going to be he's going to be inducted into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame later this summer. He could be the greatest prep athlete in the history of our state. He was All-State in three sports, and he was High School Player of the Year in every publication that ever came out in 1998 for baseball. He was also a Parade All-American and quarterback. I mean, the list of things he did is amazing. And yet, of course, as professional life just really kind of fell apart. And he's gonna reflect on all of it. And sports can be very, very cruel. We all know from our experience, even Denny's experience, he had a great career until his arm went bad, but it always ends poorly. Hard to imagine a career ending more poorly than it did for Drew Henson. His last team, the Detroit Lions, they went 0-16. They drafted Matthew Stafford, and then he was done at 28. But the heights that he hit before that, just staggering. So he's nice enough, kind enough, and bored enough right now to come on and talk to us.
Hey, Denny and I have a quick question for you. When is this soliloquy going to end?
End of soliloquy? As my mother said, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, and you're the last one that should talk about soliloquies. But we all get along. Now, you may continue. I had my first 3 minutes and 10 seconds. Take it away, Bob.
I want to say one thing, and I want to hear from Denny right now. And the one thing I want to say is, buddy, happy birthday. We love you.
Hey, Bob, thank you.
My teenage hero turned 76 on Sunday. How could this be, Denny?
Honest to God, 76. I thought it was 50 for the 26th time. By the way, I want to thank everybody for all the texts and the emails and some phone calls yesterday. The phone never stopped and the text never stopped. So thank you. Thank you very much. As far as Drew goes, you know, great guy. A couple of my kids went to school with him. Everybody liked him. He was the hero on campus. That's for sure. And it's just too bad that he didn't become the same star that he was in high school and the way he performed. He was,
in college too. Let's not forget he was an amazing quarterback that would have been the number one pick in the draft. Yes, it did go downhill from there. I think in many ways it's a cautionary tale, and I want to hear from him as he looks back at what went wrong to tell us if he would have done things differently, might there have been a different result? And he does have a lot of thoughts about that.
Of it may have been bad coaching. A lot of it could have been the coaching aspect of it, because people want to take you out of what you. It's amazing to me when you come out of high school that everybody wants to change you. Yet they signed you because you did so well in high school throwing a fastball or hitting home runs. And apparently we'll ask him if they did many changes with him when he first got there. Because I just don't think you can go from setting a record to Zippo overnight. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, it might have hurt him that he left Michigan a year early. Yes, so maybe, I'm looking at the papers over the weekend. Juwan Howard is now saying both Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner are weighing their options, and they're still in the process of deciding whether they're going to leave. Now, you look at those two kids last year. We watch every Michigan game. They're so inconsistent. And Livers struggled with a lot of injuries, too. They're both talented. But it's not just that they'll become better players with at least another year in college. College is fun, especially in a great college town like Ann Arbor. And you can ask Eli Zerrett and Mark Fellauer if you don't believe me. Can you imagine being a really big man on the Michigan campus? 20-year-old co-eds falling all over you. The parties, the fun. Oh, by the way, what the hell ever did happen to Michigan basketball stars like Nick Stauskas and DJ Wilson, who left way too early? They're watching basketball. Wilson is a bench warmer in Milwaukee, rarely gets into a game. And you know Nick Stauskas is still only 26? He spent the last 2 years playing in the Spanish Euro League after having little impact in the NBA. And how about Iggy Brazdeikis? Left Michigan after just 2 years. Iggy Brazdeikis is now with the Knicks. The Westchester Knicks and the NBG League. It's just kids leave too soon, and I think it retards their development often.
Now, how about this? That, and I'm not going to disagree with that, but I forget who was I just reading about. Another kid who's going to go. Kenyon Martin's kid played an extra year of high school basketball, and he's ready to go to the pros now. But the point is, he talked to guys that like LaMelo Ball that went and played in Europe. Maybe instead of staying another year at Michigan, you go play a year in Europe with pros in a more NBA-like style. So maybe college to stay another year isn't necessarily the best way that a young man can better prepare himself for the NBA. So you think
he should go to Europe or go some other place to play?
I'm not telling him what to do. Yeah,
I agree because you know what? The as they say, the rabbit's out of the cage. Bottom line is you're never going to put it back. In other words, you can leave in your first year of college. Hell, you don't even have to go to college anymore. You can go someplace else in Europe or someplace to play basketball. So again, but it gets down to what we've always said. These kids go to college to play basketball or football or baseball, whatever it might be, and getting the education eventually it becomes secondary.
And to your point, Bob, well taken. My 4 years at Michigan was a lot of fun. Of course, I wasn't training to be anything because my career planning didn't take much work. It was easy. I took the easiest curriculum at school, which was communications, at least was easy for me. Mm-hmm. And I had a great time, you know, chasing women and having fun and playing poker and video games and whatever there was back then. Yeah.
How much better would it have been for you if all the hot co-eds were chasing you? Because that's what it is if you're a big man jock on the Michigan campus.
But your priorities are wrong there. They want to be professional basketball players. Right. And they can get the women and the co-eds wherever they go. They don't need the ones in Ann Arbor, who I'm told, although I disagreed, weren't as good looking as the ones at other schools.
But yes, like my alma mater, Michigan State. Everybody knows that.
But your point is well taken about Stauskas and Brazdeikis, and you know they're not experiencing what they had hoped to experience as the pros. By the way, before we go on anymore, we should really, like everyone else has to do, because I'm scared to be here with this. In fact, the longer you stay in the house, the harder it is to go out. You're here, you're safe. You look at TV, you see where Fauci says there could be 2 million people eventually infected. There could be.
I saw 200,000, and even that was a load of BS.
Stop.
Ridiculous.
Shut up.
Shut up. I'm saying you're part of the panic. You're part of this panic.
Panic?
Yes.
Where's the panic at this point in time?
Exactly.
You okay, boys?
Panic.
Okay, boys.
Everything
good.
Is Bob.
Okay, boys.
Bob, everything is the way it is right now. We all have to accept what's going on in this world right now. I don't see any panic in his face. He's okay. Not
May
the kind
the
of guy that...
Let me know when I can have the floor.
Well, I'm going to, but let me say this to you. I've got it, and you're right about the boredom is setting in with me big time right now. And I can tell you I've become a little bit of a basket case. I have a harder time of getting up in the morning, for God's sakes, and I've never had trouble getting up. And so what I've done is in the last couple of days, and you may try this, at the end of the day at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, I get in my car, and I drive 30 minutes in a direction and 30 minutes home just to get the hell out of the house. I mean, it breaks up the day a little bit, and I come back a little bit refreshed rather than sitting there and watching the next chapter of Shameless on Netflix.
Bob, there was predicted that Fauci said there could be 200,000 deaths. So do I believe him or do I believe you? Facts dictate
somebody
the right way to react.
Thing about physicians, epidemiologists, scientists, they're all over the map on this. That's one guy you're quoting is saying this. Now, as I said, if I can have the floor for just a moment, these were the weekend developments that I gleaned from this. Christian Wood of the Pistons, now totally recovered from coronavirus. Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell got it right after him. Totally recovered. Celtics coach Brad Stevens said Sunday that guard Marcus Smart is doing, quote, great in the wake of testing positive for COVID. Now you have Jackson Brown and Tom Hanks and his wife recovered just fine.
Eli, Jackson, let me say something.
Okay.
You know why? You know why, Bob?
I asked for the floor.
I know that, but I'm going to give you the floor in about 2 seconds. But you know why they recovered? Because they followed the doctor's orders. Whether it's that doctor or another doctor, they followed the orders and they got well. They got better. It's okay.
And here's my thing. You know, Bob, if you talk to 100 people that were infected, 98 to 99 are going to be just fine. I don't want to be the one who takes the one Skittle out of the jar of 100 and eats it and dies, okay? The deaths are right there in front of you. 120,000 cases, 2,500 deaths.
That's right.
Math.
Nation of 330 million people. We had 2,000 deaths on Friday, and now we got 2,500. Unfortunately, it sucks. This whole thing sucks. But viruses always affect the elderly, sometimes infants, and they kill. They kill thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So what now? What's going on with this? That's what scientists, behavioral scientists, will be studying in the future. Why this reaction to this?
There's one thing we overlook. These deaths that we've had here are in a very short period of time. This is not the typical flu that we counted towards after the 12th month. We are just starting out with this, and we've already got 2,500 people, at least 2,500 people that we know about.
Times reported this morning, they don't like to report stuff like this, cases in Seattle now are way down. Cases in France
finally
and Italy are going down. I mean, let's be real about this and stop again panicking. The paranoia is incredible.
Nobody's panicking. We're following the rules.
Toilet paper. Nobody's panicking. Got any toilet paper for us?
There will always be people who panic. Yeah. Like when your team loses the first game of the season, people panic because they think but 99% of the people don't panic. And the fact is, the facts dictate the right way to react. Like I said, I'm staying inside because I want to stay safe. I'm not panicking. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. But for you, you know what? I don't want to get into this anymore. I just want to thank the people who are on the front lines. I want to feel for the victims. I want to praise the caregivers. And I'm laying low. But please, nothing more on this show about that we're all in a mindless panic.
I know.
I hate that phrase.
Right.
I don't want to hear that phrase ever again, okay? Please.
Okay, then don't bring it up because I will continue to say that that is the truth. It's exactly what it is. But you're right. We're not getting anywhere by continuing to debate this, me against you two guys and so on and so forth. You don't want to hear a lot of facts about this stuff. It doesn't interest you. So go on. Just you stay inside. I'm not staying inside. I'll tell you that.
Facts, 120,000 people, 2,500 deaths. That's a fact. That's 2%. I don't want to be one of the 2%. I'm following the rules. I'm not panicking. In fact, I'm having
stay
a really
inside.
Good time. I've really enjoyed this. I'm
That's
reading.
Good.
I'm walking my dog. Like I said, I'm being a slob all day long, and I'm doing the right thing. But, I will say this about the media real fast, all right? It's true. The only scintilla of truth in what you're saying is that the media does look at negative news is better, is more will get people to tune in longer than positive news. So we have our president who's trying to be very positive and say, hey, it's all going to be over, blah, blah, blah. But that information may not be that accurate. And then you get the media saying how many people are going to die. Here's a story for you. About the media. I'm laying on the table getting a vasectomy 30 years ago. I'm getting painted up by some nurse who's got to be 80 years old with bleach blonde hair, grinding her false teeth. And she goes, you're on the news. She says, you know, I can't stand all the negative news all the time about all the deaths and all of this. And I said to her, ma'am, that's just the way the business works. What's a better story? Three people shot in a house in Detroit, or nothing happened again in Bloomfield Hills today. Which makes the news? Okay, the first one makes the news. But
wait, do you remember that? I forget which network it was. It might have been one of the Turner ones. About what, 15, 20 years ago, they listened to people like this and said, "We're going to do a news show that's only good news." Yeah, so they went on and they just did happy, good, feel good stories. That's what was on the news every night. They didn't make it. They didn't last long.
Nope, they did not.
Well, like I said, facts are facts, and they have slowed the virus down in China by keeping everybody inside, and hopefully, and I think what Fauci is saying is that if we don't follow the rules, that can happen, but we will follow the rules, and we will stay inside, and we will defeat this. Again, this isn't, and I don't like the terminology, this is a war against, it's not a war, it's a health crisis, and we're just trying to do the smart thing to get through a health crisis. And the sports world doesn't know what to do. I got to watch Alex Rodriguez and J-Lo playing wiffle ball with their kids. I got to watch. By the way, this is, in fact, I want to ask you this. There's a website called Bless You Boys, which is put on by SB Nation. And I don't want to sound old fashioned, but this video, I watched part of a simulated game yesterday between the Indians and the Tigers, who were to have played at Progressive Field. I haven't understood it since I used to play Mario Kart with my kids 30 years ago. How the hell do they on the fly create video animation that looks so damn real? I just don't. You got fans and umpires and fielders. How does it happen? It's the most amazing thing to me to this day. Mark, how do they do it? How do they do it?
Well, a lot of those games, you know, you can play along. So they've always had the animation has just gotten that much better year over year over year. It's the stats and the algorithms and the outcomes that always amaze me. And the randomness. I mean, they have to throw every once in a while this randomness in so the Tigers actually win a game.
But when they but when they show a guy hit a ball to left field and everybody reacts, how do they get the right fielder? And there's like 50,000 people that are all reacting at the same time. And it
Eli, think about what you're saying. This is like sitting down with somebody like George Lucas and saying, George, how do you do it? What, you got like 2 weeks for me to begin to explain this stuff? And I don't think Mark's even capable of fully explaining.
God, no. I just play the games.
I agree.
But none of it's pre-programmed, right? All of it is on the fly.
Well,
right?
the stats and the algorithms are, yeah.
So the other thing the Bless You Boys website is doing, it has a tournament with 32 players called the Best Love Tiger. This is how people are mindlessly trying to get through this. And they also had one where you pick your starting pitching staff. I don't know if you saw this, Denny, but you're not going to be happy because they had 15 Tiger pitchers. You get to have 9 points and pick and use five. Nine points to pick your start, or maybe I don't know how many points, but you're a 3 point starter, and the 4 point starters were Jack Morris and Dizzy Trout. You were a 3 point starter with Tommy Bridges, and the top starters were Hal Newhouser, I hate to say it, Mickey Lolich.
What was this? How did they get to the numbers they had? I don't know what it means.
They're making it up. They gave 15 players that you could choose your own.
Yeah, here's something they're not making up. This is a headline in Monday's New York Post. What's going on now with all the sports events canceled? This has been a historic blow to the mafia, because the mafia makes millions and millions and millions on illegal sports gambling. And there ain't no sports to play. There's no gambling. So with the season on hold, you know, you wonder about what's going to happen to some of this stuff. So I got the two gambling experts here with me, Eli and Denny. The New York Post also ran a column over the weekend by a guy who runs a sports book in Las Vegas. And is this the greatest single name for a sports gambler you've ever heard in your life? Vinny Magliolo. Interesting question
I think Vito Giacalone is better.
Yeah. So anyway, they want to know. They're asking this guy in his advice column, what about bets on these championships? So Vinny answered, the regular season wins and point totals are on hold until the leagues determine what will constitute a regular season. Now, he says, at the South Point, where I work, we stipulated that teams had to play 82 regular season games for action on those wagers, or the wagers will be refunded. So I mean, I don't understand what that means. That means since they're not going to play a full sked, obviously, that all bets, everything is going to be refunded. That's really going to be a nightmare, isn't it?
It's going to be more than a nightmare. I don't know if you got the is that a newspaper article? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's from the New York Post, again, quoting this guy who works at the South.
I need
Point
to look at it. I've never heard of a bookmaker giving any money back.
Well, I mean, okay. Listen, it can't be as hard as sending checks to 200 million Americans. By the way, they got to take a quick break now and thank one of our sponsors who has stayed with us through this, and that's Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Absolutely. Wealth Strategies. Got to take our hat off to Luke, who's still there to help people to navigate their way through what's going on here with the stock market up and down and up and down, and the uncertainty of all that. But hey, that's what markets are about, is uncertainty. And most people don't spend enough time trying to figure out or talk to pros who can help them navigate their way through. So call Luke at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies at 248-663-4748. He'll create the plan to help get you through this and then eventually reach all your financial goals. It's complimentary. Don't even have to go to the office. He'll do it over the phone with you, answer all your financial questions. And if you got that comfort level with him that we do, then maybe you'll consider making the change or starting to manage your portfolio with him. It's 248-663-4748. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, a very loyal sponsor, and we thank him for that. Advisory services off the Royal Alliance Associates, Inc., other marketing names, product service reference here, independent Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And there are some things that are still going on as scheduled, like the NFL draft on April 23rd. I think that's a great idea. There's no need to do the draft the way they always do it. It can be easily done the way it was in the old days in a hotel ballroom with Pete Rozelle writing the names on a big white piece of paper as some guy comes up and hands him a piece of paper that says who they're going to pick.
Well, Roger Goodell has issued an order that if anybody criticizes him.
Yeah, Goodell. Yeah.
Gets him really mad about the draft when it's scheduled right now. And the majority, according to all the reports, the majority of the owners and the general managers want to move the draft back. But those led by Goodell will not allow it to be moved back. So he's been getting criticized publicly by a number of guys. Now he's this in order. The next guy that criticizes me publicly is going to get me in his lap, and we're going to start fining people. So that's, I mean, what is he? Is he the general of our military? Is he now the general of everything?
He has no understanding of all of our First Amendment rights under the United States Constitution.
And never has.
Well, I don't know about that. He's a lawyer.
People have a point, because when there's so much more analysis that they want to do on these guys. They don't get to do the in-person interviews. They don't get to bring them into camp and run them and check them out. Of course, they've already been on the road. They've scouted the prospects. They've attended games and been to the combine. But this is different. You know, there's a lot of late arriving information when you interview guys and you unearth details about them by interviewing other people. So it does add some doubt, which may be an advantage to the Lions. You know, now the other teams that outdraft them won't have all the advantages. It's more of a crapshoot.
Well, the other thing too is the NHL has canceled their draft. The NBA is dark. They're not nothing scheduled at this point. And Major League Baseball right now is scheduled to go in June. So, but I just don't get over this, how much power this guy has. Although he's making $20 million a year, I guess.
No, he's not. He's making $45 million a year.
How much?
$45 million a year.
Oh, my God. I gave him a salary cut. Well,
I mean, it's ridiculous. Hey, how about this from college football? Right after we finished doing our show on Friday, Ohio State announced that it had landed a commitment from Trevion Henderson. Yep. He is the number one ranked running back prospect in the country. He's from Virginia. This guy's going to be, if he doesn't get hurt, a superstar at Ohio State. And he chose Ohio State among, inter alia, the University of Michigan. So here's another highly skilled player Harbaugh is going to have to contend with. He's got to get kids like this away from Ryan Day in Columbus, or the embarrassment at the hands of Ohio State is going to continue.
Can't argue with that.
Now I shut you guys up on that one.
No, it's true.
No, I mean it's a very much an uphill battle. You know, there's no doubt about it. Ohio State is one of those three or four schools that just gets first crack at all the good guys, and for good reason. It could take, I don't know, could. There are people that are still positive that Michigan can get back in it, but I don't know. There may be a little too much of a gap right now.
Well, plus Ohio State pays more.
And we've been talking about it a long time. The other schools, at least the bigger schools, they wind up with all the players. We wind up with something less than the perfect five. So it is what it is.
So Denny, I got a couple questions for you. We always have a lot of questions for you on this program. I'm sure you saw that Jim Wynn died over the weekend.
Yeah.
The nice Troy kid. Cannon. Troy Cannon was 78, just 2 years older than our birthday boy, Danny McClain.
Oh, boy.
And he came up to the big leagues the exact same year Denny did, 1963. This guy was 5'10", 160, and in an era before steroids, finished with almost 300 major league homers, 291. But the question is, you never really faced him, did you? Because you guys
No, never did. No. I don't recall ever facing him. Maybe in spring training.
He was a national player.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, minor, probably in the spring training, but that's about all. But he was a good player.
He sure was. Player.
He wasn't quite that big. I thought he was, and I used to get him mixed up with No Neck Williams, another short guy. But right. I think No Neck was a little bit smaller. But
Other question for Denny now, if I may, Denny, does the name Dan Hubbs mean anything to you? No relation to Ken Hubbs from Chicago and your youth together. Hubbs.
I was going to say I was thinking it was one of the Hubs because my wife dated Kenny.
I know that.
Just a different Hub.
So Dan Hubbs.
No, Sharon dated Kenny Hubbs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure she did. Yeah. So Dan Hubbs is a former head baseball coach at the University of Southern California. Mm. He now works for the Tigers. Chris McCoskey wrote a very interesting feature on him in the Detroit News Friday. Chris wrote, "I listened to Matthew Boyd talk about how he improved his curveball after one of his spring starts." I saw that interview too. And he went on a 10-minute dissertation about spin axis and spin rates that left me dizzy. Now here, writes McCoskey, is Hub's job description with the Tigers. Quote, "To establish organization-wide protocol with an emphasis on leveraging data and technology to aid growth and performance," end quote. He's been using Edgertronic cameras. Was it Rapsodo machines? Mm-hmm. A lot better than the Tigers. And he said that this knowledge was born out of necessity when he was trying to recruit players to USC and they were going to turn pro perhaps. He said, "You have to have an answer for how you're going to help this kid develop in 3 years. If you're asking him to turn down $800,000, $1 million from pro ball to come to your college, you better have a plan in place for how you're going to make him better." Denny, how did you win 31 games in 68 and two straight Cy Youngs, having no idea what your spin axis was?
I'm beginning to think there were no hitters on the other teams. I mean, literally, nobody walked into the batter's box. We got to pitch to just the box. We didn't pitch to players. I don't get it. I mean, all of this technology and nobody wins 20. No, very few people come close to winning 15. So all of this technology, there's some that can help. Johnny Sain had a basic concept of what the spin was. He had a baseball, believe it or not, on a stick, and he would show you on the stick what the curveball looked like, a real curveball, what a real slider looked like, and other pitches. And this is the way Johnny Sain taught guys how to throw. Johnny had a—
explain that to the fans. He balanced a ball on the top of
He had a stick about twice as big, three times as big as a ballpoint pen. And the ball went on the end of it. And then he was able to spin the ball. And he would move the pen around, or the stick around. You know, if he wanted to throw a fastball, a two-seamer, he would tip it up. If he wanted to throw a four-seamer, he would tip it down, okay, sideways. But Johnny would teach you so you could see what the spin is supposed to look like. And what that gave you the advantage of was to see the spin at the end of the toss, not in the beginning, but at the end. Where did the spin actually have its most effectiveness? And Johnny did this with great success, as we all know. He knew what the hell he was talking about, had a lot of good pitchers. And I just don't understand all this technology, and we still don't win any games of any consequence.
Because everybody has it, guys. It's like saying, you can have two 200-pound fighters that are evenly matched, and 200-pound fighters who are evenly matched. In the old days, there was no technology, so you were all evenly matched. Now you have to keep up because the game is much more technical and refined, and you have players who have perfect body movements that they're learning through these incredible cameras. The example is what Justin Verlander— I had never heard of the Edgerton, whatever it is, or any of these cameras until the example of when he went to the Astros and found these microscopic microscopic or minute changes in the way he gripped the ball, the way it came off his hands, that helped him become a better pitcher. So they all have technology, and if you're behind it, don't pretend that it's just mumbo jumbo. If you don't have it, you're going to lose. It's just as
every
simple as that.
Every pitcher that ever picked up the ball, and you got to listen to this because what the hell you just said now makes no sense. The ball has seams on it, right? Those seams control what the ball does, period. The guy holding the ball then controls the seams. Bottom line is, if you can get the seams to do what you want it to do and to be effective, you're gonna win some ball games. But
no
what you're talking about is wrong, absolutely wrong.
If you see a camera that shows you how the ball is coming off your hands, Johnny Sain couldn't show you that. So you can correct your motion through through technology that you couldn't in the old days.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this also about that. I guarantee you guys, both of you guys, as great a pitching coach as Johnny Sain was, and as super smart a baseball man as Johnny Sain was, if he were alive and pitching coach today, he'd be using all of this stuff too to try to keep pace, as you say, Eli.
He certainly probably would.
There's another
not all
death.
Of it, but he would be using some of it.
There's another death that you didn't point out. Jimmy Wynn, yes, but how about Curly Neal? Now, I remember Bob and I went to see the Globetrotters. I'd say it was, I don't know, 35, 40 years ago. They were at Cobo, and they had a guy on their the Globetrotter named Bob Babyface Page.
Robert Babyface Page. You and Eli and I played on the Detroit Sports Broadcasters basketball pickup team. This is a preliminary game at Cobo before a Pistons game. So 7-1, Robert Babyface Page comes out to start. Our center, the legendary and unfortunately late, a chondroplasmic dwarf, Mark Andrews. Doc came out and he had the number 1/2 on his uniform. And he's standing there ready to take the center jump against 7-1 Babyface Page. And just moments before, I took my then six-year-old daughter Kelly with me to that game, Eli. We're sitting on our bench together. She looks over, she notices Mark Andrews, and she shrieks, "Daddy, look, there's a Munchkin!" And you've never seen anybody turn more red in your life than Mark Andrews did on that day. That was a lot of fun, man.
Anyway, the Globetrotters were obviously an incredible story. And Curly Neal, for people that don't know or don't remember, I mean, he played what? He played in 120 countries or something. He played 6,000 games. But he was the guy who succeeded Marcus Haynes as the dribbler. And I was a kid and learning about the Globetrotters. I would see the videos or the film of Marcus Haynes, who was the most incredible dribbler of all time. Curly later did that. And you got guys like Isaiah Thomas saying how they learned how to dribble by watching Marcus Haynes and Curly Neal. Nancy Lieberman played against the Globetrotters, and she said, you know, Curly learned from Marcus, took it to a whole different level. She says, everything you see today from Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry doing all started with the Trotters, and it's true. So just hats off to the incredible Harlem Globetrotters, started by a guy named, anybody who's
Abe
found the
Saperstein.
Abe Saperstein.
Sure.
Anyway, Sweet Georgia Brown was my theme song.
That's how I started listening to Eli before I ever actually met him. You know me from the 60s. I'm listening to ABX every day anyway. And all of a sudden, there's this whistling come on, and this guy comes on with this weird voice, and he's talking about sports. I said, "What the hell is this?" And I'm listening to this guy, and I'm thinking, you know, this guy's actually pretty good.
I think I said the story, but back then Mike Duffy did an article on me when I got into television and became a little better known, and he calls my mother and says to her, "Mrs. Zarrett, how did Eli's voice get that way?" And there's a silence on the end of the line, and she goes, "What way?" It was just a voice.
I don't know. Hey, folks, we got to tell you, frankly, we're flying by the seat of our pants today, all of us here. So are we doing – I got the mailbag, and we got Drew Henson. Where do you want to go now? Do we have another break? What do we got to do?
Well, we got a break coming up in a moment. Mark, have you gotten in touch with Drew?
I did.
Call him a little bit later?
Totally open-ended. I told him about probably 25 minutes from now, but he's pretty open-ended.
Yeah, I don't have a lot more. NFL.
Well, I got one for you, and it's kind of a non-story, but the media around the world made it a big story. Aaron Rodgers, quarterback with Green Bay, right? He's sitting in Peru. He's got $100 million at least, plus he's wandering around with Dana Patrick, right?
Yep.
And they're scared to death they're going to miss their airplane to get back to the United States. So they start running to the airport. They got there just in time. By the way, I don't know what the hell they're running for. They're flying in a private jet, their own private jet. They're flying back. You know, you bought 40 Arby's stores or something about 8-10 months ago. And bottom line is this guy running to the airport. Think about this. See if you can see this in your mind. All of this money, he's got a private jet and going back to Wisconsin. Oh, no, going to California, Malibu, because he bought the house with Dania on the ocean.
Danica.
I don't care. Mrs. Rogers, Mr. Rogers' wife. And bottom line is they make this a story of such importance. It was on every network news
that
night.
Nothing else going on, Denny. Earth to Denny. There's nothing
There isn't anything going on. There's 2,500 people dead already.
Yeah, and you look at the papers, and everybody's doing their mock drafts, and now that Goodell said the draft's going on, you get these sorry FLs fans, mainly the young guys, whom were the Lions going to select in the first round overall? Kids, they're going to blow it anyway. It doesn't matter, but that's what everybody's doing.
Well, Sir listens to our show every day. I sent him a message the other day, and I said, Aaron, next time, go to the airport an hour earlier. So that's the way you fix it.
Let's we're going to do the mailbag in a moment. Denny, would you please read the spot for our other wonderfully loyal sponsor, Hall
our
Financial.
Our great friends, David Hall at Hall Financial, and they have a couple of questions for all of us, including our listeners. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have a lingering high interest rate credit card debt? You may or may not know it right now, but the rates are so low. It's a smart idea would be to call the company today. With over 1,000 five-star reviews that has recently been averaging 10 days from start to finish on listeners that have applied for a refi on their mortgage, and that's Hall Financial. A lot of homeowners need to reduce their rates, shorten their term, eliminate PMI, or take cash out. Now is the time. Even though the media isn't reporting it the way they were in August, rates are still historically low, and Hall Financial is the place to be. Hall Financial has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients for a reason. If you want to check in to see if something makes sense, you go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started or call 248-308-5000 and make sure to tell them we sent you. Eli, Denny, and Bob. Equal housing lender, NMLS 1467435.
You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, let's do a little mailbag here and then we'll get to Drew Henson. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank I should probably pick up my microphone, shouldn't I, before I start this?
Good idea.
The big heading in bold, thank you, guys. This is from Brian Fusen, a regular listener. I think he's written before. As a mailman, my job is deemed an essential service, and I've continued to work every day as we go through this time. Really appreciate not just the fact that you guys continue keep doing your show, but the last two episodes with Rosie and Ken Dryden have been awesome. Thank you guys for keeping on and entertaining all of the listeners. Stay safe, guys. Now, Dryden was, this is from Daryl Champagne, website submission, asknofilter@gmail.com. And he writes, Dryden was fascinating. Great interview. Not long enough. When it ended rather abruptly, Ken was surprised. So was I. And disappointed, too. Rather abruptly? Did you think that's how that interview ended?
Well, you know, I thought there were some other topics to go into, but he was very detailed, very he's a brilliant man. We all kind of felt that it was kind of dragging a little bit. Oh. And Denny, you know, Denny's giving me the wrap-up sign, and you're kind of giving me the wrap-up sign. So I just kind of, it had been 35 minutes. We like to keep him to half an hour. And I said goodbye to him, but maybe not everyone shares the same level of interest that this particular caller or writer did.
I did see some other tweets saying they thought the interview was too short as well. And you know what I think? That's a compliment in my book.
It is.
Boy, overall, that's too bad, man. So anyway, the numbers to call us or text us is 760-89-BALLS. Hello, darlings. I have such exciting news for you on this program today. Grosse Pointe Charles is back. He writes, chaps, I'm here in quarantine with the assistance of my butlers, chefs, and massage therapists in Grosse Pointe. As you know, my own wonderfully waspy hometown. So charming. He says, epic interview with Ken Dryden. So interesting to hear about two brilliant men, Dryden and Scotty Bowman, a complex man. Great work. Okay. Gotta go. My pedicurist is now at my front door. Toodles. But before Grosse Pointe Charles left off, he actually, did you see this? He put a picture in our mailbag that I can't obviously show you guys. He says, quote, an actual photo inside Pager's condo. The photo consisted of a cheap pizza in a box with parts of dead animals, euphemistically called pepperoni, strewn all over it, a bottle of Mountain Dew, and a well-worn sex doll. Charles knows I do not cheat pizza or drink Mountain Dew. I
don't think that was Charles. I think that was just another random random texter there.
So that was Brandon McAvey, of course, our producer, and DJ Weiser. I wish you guys would maybe pronounce it Weiser or Weiser. Tweeted the other day to Brandon, to the Drew and Mike podcast, to Mark Fellhour, and to Charlie LaDuff. Quote, thank you for the awesome shows you dudes do. You always keep it real. Denny, you're now 76. Is it flattering to be called a dude still?
Yeah, I'm a dude.
You're a dude, man.
I'm a dude. I'm a little bit more mature of a dude. You know,
a dude or a don't.
You guys remember? you guys
remember no, that? No. It isn't don't. It's never.
But you can still dream.
Oh boy, can I ever, you know.
Anything else, Bob?
You remember that? I know you do remember this, the not awful mailbag when Eli was perturbed by the fact that we actually let you fans be part of this show too and stated his aversion to even doing the mailbag segment. One of you guys actually started a Twitter account with this title. He wants to know today, and I've never thought to ask Eli this. Eli, when you were a kid growing up, a Mets wacko, who was your favorite Met of all time?
Oh, my goodness. God, I loved Eddie Cranepool. I loved little Al Jackson, the pitcher. I loved
Rusty Staub.
Rusty Staub didn't. No, he wasn't an original Met. Choo Choo Coleman, the catcher, I loved. Roger Craig, who later on, of course, was the pitching coach of the 84 Tigers, pitched for the 62 and 63 Mets. And I loved him because he was also had been with the Brooklyn Dodgers, who I saw play 1 year before they moved to L.A. So Roger Craig, and by the way, Roger Craig was 12 and 22 and then 10 and 24.
Yeah.
And he told me when he was with, I said, you know, Roger, he says, you have to be a very good pitcher for them to throw you out that many times to lose that many games. So those are some of my favorite Mets. And of course, that Casey Stengel, the manager was Casey Stengel, who I'd hated as a Yankee manager.
Everybody's favorite Met, Eli, even as a boy growing up in Detroit.
Marv Thornberry.
Thank you. Marvelous Thornberry. I thought you might name him, as a matter of fact. So anyway, you guys can tweet us at Eli Zaret, at MU2Denny, at Bob Page Sports. And Sunday, my old New York TV sidekick, the great NBA writer at NBC TV, NBA reporter, Pete Vesey, followed me. I hadn't heard from Peter in a long time. You wouldn't believe this. Immediately, guys are tweeting back and said they'd love it if we could have Pete Vesey on the show. And so we will. He's all set for Thursday.
Now, I asked Brandon this morning, have you heard of Peter Vesey? And he said, no. And that's understandable. He was a major NBA. By the way, he's in the NBA Hall of Fame as a sports writer for the New York Post. And, you know, Page has kind of got an acerbic personality. And Page, you know, is kind of a New York type of guy who's kind of an in-your-face. Peter Vesey was as tough a writer who confronted more players and coaches and general managers, a really tough SOB whose brother, George Vesey, wrote for the New York Times and was a really kind of a more of a just a great writer, but not in a totally different vein.
Right. Yeah, there was no reason to say, I can't wait to read what George Vesey is going to say about this. You never had a reason, and they do not get along. I think George passed away, didn't he? But they never got along.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm excited to talk to Peter Vesey, who will answer questions about famous NBA players that he knew very, very well in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and I believe the 90s, too. In fact, he still writes for the New York Post as a kind of a writer emeritus.
He's been retired for years. I haven't seen Pete Spilon in a long time, and I read the Post every day.
Well, I think until 2017 or 2018, he was writing.
Okay, we'll check on that. Unnamed texter. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
He wasn't one of your clients, was he?
No.
Okay.
The unnamed texter is with us, maybe several people. How would we know? He says, I hope you guys are in for the long haul. I don't see any sports happening for the next 3 to 6 months at least. All indications of the curve, the recovery time, slowing of this virus. You know, it's a situation, as we have discussed ad infinitum here. So this begs the question I'm going to ask you guys, because I haven't in 10 days or 2 weeks. Do you miss sports yet?
That's a great question. I do. Like I said, sports to me now is a joy, but it's a responsibility also. So I know they're coming back. I don't feel like it's sapping the energy out of me. I don't feel like I would want to know how the Tigers were doing. I mean, I like sports, but I think I can live my life without them. I'm not letting that get me down. I miss toilet paper and I miss getting a haircut and I miss being close to people. I miss all that. But, yes, I miss it, but I'm not. Feel like it's altered my life in a way that makes living more that much more difficult.
Yeah, and I echo what you say too. I mean, I kind of miss just got us guys hanging around for a couple hours a couple times a week. And the other stuff I missed the NCAA tournament, the NBA stuff, which would be coming around right now. And then we got the MLB. It'd be nice to see the games. And I'm not talking about, I don't watch the games like I think Bob does. But I'll just go on, pick a pitcher every night, one or two or three pitchers, and watch those guys pitch every night. But that's, but not to see who wins or loses, just to see what kind of stuff a guy has.
And in that vein of me watching a bunch of games like that, I was thinking about this myself. My first live game I ever saw was in 1959 at Briggs Stadium when the Tigers took on the hated Yankees in a doubleheader. And I've done nothing since that time but watch games. There weren't a lot of games on when we were boys growing up. And then it get more and more and more. And now every game anywhere is on all the time. I feel pressure to watch games. I think, well, I really should watch that game. Oh, man, it's the third game I've seen today. I don't miss sports at all. It's but been you know a what? Really nice best for
you
me.
Know what? You know what we're all going to get a chance to see? A doubleheader.
Well, I'll say this. When I was a kid, and at the real apex of my fandom, there weren't that much sports on TV. I read, and I really got some of my greatest sports thrills, believe it or not, was reading about the old timers and reading about
great teams, reading about great careers,
but the fantasy. And I would, you know, imagine meeting these guys, and actually I did get to meet a lot of them later when I became a broadcaster. So I don't need to watch hours and hours. I do like the drama. I do like the stories. I kind of miss the good stories. And by the way, just so you know, there are some sports going on. The Premier League is still playing in Belarus and Nicaragua. No fans in Nicaragua.
Have you got a 1-0 final for us then from one of the football matches? which nil final? Oh, all right.
But the problem is nobody knows when things are going to start again. Major League Baseball hoping June 1st. That's still over 2 months away. So whatever it is, you got to get used to it, and I think we're all kind of getting used to it. Hey, we got to
I got to close the mailbag with this one thing. I've been trying to get this on for 2 weeks. This is from Chaz Quatrine, I believe this is how he pronounces it, QU. Denny, do you remember joining our Detroit men's senior baseball team when you moved from Gary, Indiana to Detroit? You played one game, then persuaded a few of us to drive back to Gary and help you move some furniture. Then we never saw you again. That's okay. Well, we still love you, Denny. Happy birthday.
I have never lived in Gary, Indiana. Maybe we got it confused with another city, but no, I'm sorry. And as far as the furniture, I don't know. You know, listen, I had breakfast this morning, but I don't know what I had.
Join the club, pal.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Hey, well, we'd like to thank our listeners in WCWA in Toledo. And also on WDFN in Detroit. Thank you for listening. You want to catch the Drew Henson interview? All you got to do is download the podcast at nofilterpodcast.com. Now let's talk to Drew. Well, he may have been the best prep athlete in Michigan history. It's certainly no one won more honors than Drew Henson. 3 sports star at Brighton High School, All-State in football, basketball, and baseball, high school player of the year in baseball in every publication.
What, this kid, when he can't play, this kid couldn't play hockey, Eli? What's wrong with him?
There was only 3 seasons, unfortunately. He set 26 Michigan High School Association baseball records. His senior year, he had 605, 22 homers, 83 RBIs, and as a pitcher, was 14-1.
Would you repeat those numbers, please?
14-1, 0.86 ERA, struck out 20 of 21 in a postseason game. We haven't even mentioned the football career. We'll get into that later. He's going to be inducted later this summer into the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame, joining high school and college luminaries like Derek Jeter, Kirk Gibson, John Smoltz, and Tiger greats from Kaline to Cobb to travel. Welcome to the show, Drew. And before we talk about your baseball career, is your family safe and do you still have enough toilet paper?
Yes, and yes. The two big things in our lives these days. It's crazy world we're in right now. But things are good down here in Tampa. Just working on some first day homeschool today.
Tell us what you've been up to. The last time you played, before we get into the baseball thing, the last time you played was in 08 with the Lions. So it's been 12 years. I know you coached in the minor league system with the Yankees. You did a little play-by-play. Catch us up on what you've done after your pro career ended at 28. Now it's 12 years later. You're 40. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm 40. Turned 40 last month. And, you know, you get a little better perspective with years. You know, finishing up playing at 28 is one of those situations where I never envisioned myself being moving on before I was 30. But just like any athlete, you're used to the competition and you're searching for what's going to find that, you know, that need that you have later on in life. So first couple of years I decompressed. I did some college football broadcasting, a handful of ACC games. And the thing that always I came back to was that, you know, I want to go back and work for a team. I love the competitiveness. I love being part of a team, doing your part. And then combined with just my life experiences and what I feel is my expertise, I reached out to NFL clubs trying to get in the personnel department and the scouting. And as you can imagine, it's a competitive business and you got to get in front of the right people. And after 4 or 5 months of just kind of spinning the wheels, I'd also reached out to the Yankees. And immediately they were good enough to bring me back. Mark Newman, who was my boss and the architect of the Yankee teams in the 90s, he brought me back to Tampa. And so I was lucky enough to move here with my family, and my daughter was born here. And I was a rookie ball hitting coach for 2 seasons, 13 and 14, and had a great experience working with the different hitting coaches in the organization and putting plans together for the young players and just being the resource for them as they transition, whether it's from their homes in Latin America or in the U.S. to professional baseball and adjusting to that. But all in all, I really wanted to get in the personnel side. I was able to jump in the pro scouting department for 2 years and do both major and minor league organizations and games and some winter ball as well.
This is Denny McClain. It's good to talk to
you.
Hey,
Denny.
Couple of things. Number one, obviously you like scouting, right?
Yes, I do.
And then when you finally retire from life, are you going to be retiring yourself as a Major League Baseball player or an NFL player?
I'm both. You know, I think that's what's made myself unique. But at the end of the day, you know, when you're a quarterback, you tend to look at life and things through that lens. As far as just, you know, from leadership and just your personality and perspective, I kind of always feel like a quarterback walking around.
So, Drew, here we have a kid from Brighton, Michigan. Eli already lauded your high school career. Amazing. Now you're going to go fulfill your dream and be the starting quarterback and an All-American at the University of Michigan. Except when you get there, they got a guy from Northern California named what? Tom Brady? So what did you think when you first saw Brady? And were you really expecting to start over Brady instead? What did they tell you?
Well, you know, the unique situation I had with Michigan was that, you know, I was willing to commit as a junior. And they didn't recruit a quarterback the season before. Essentially, I was committing early. But my time with Tom goes back even before then to when my father was coaching at Arizona State in 1994, and he was actually recruiting Tom to Arizona State from San Mateo, trying to get him to sign down there. And I was actually at football camp with him in the summer of 94 when I was coming out of eighth grade and Tom was about to be a senior. So our relationship goes back even back then to the mid-90s when we were both, you know, teenagers.
Well, he didn't really answer the question. I mean,
when you walk into Michigan, you understand there's competition. And, you know, they're the program they are because they have great players. And so for me, it was just going in and competing. Everyone wants to play and you're going to do everything you can within your power to try to get on the field.
Your freshman year, and I think he's a junior, he kind of beat you out, though you played quite a bit. Then in 99, it was a remarkable thing. Michigan fans are going to remember this. You're a sophomore. He's a senior. Lloyd platooned you in the first 7 games. Brady played the first quarter. You'd play the second. Then Lloyd would decide upon a quarterback for the second half. The team started off 5-0, and then he went with Brady the rest of the season. That was a strange time, and my question for you is, you know, you're in competition with this guy, and yet you got to work together and I guess try and be friends. How did that whole dynamic, and I've never understood it in any sport, even with McClain and Lolich back in the day, how do you compete with a guy and yet still maintain a teammate's relationship with him, a positive one?
Well, it starts with leadership at the top. And, you know, what Bo Schembechler preached from the 60s, it's the team, the team, the team. You see it in quotes everywhere in Ann Arbor and in the building. And first and foremost, that's your job as a quarterback and leader on the team is to put that first. So, and at the same time, Michigan hasn't gotten to where they are with not having great competition at every position. And so those two things are the first and foremost. Was it the most comfortable situations? Because no, but that's not the way the position is meant to be played. But at the same time, Tom and I, you support each other, your teammates, and it was the right call. You know, we had a month left in the season and a chance to win the Big Ten. And they said, hey, we're going to go with Tom. We're going to try to, you know, finish this thing strong and win a championship. And we finished up and we ended up going to the Orange Bowl and beating Alabama. And it was a great season.
Well, where they are right now, what's happened, I don't have to tell you, Drew, is a distant poor second to Ohio State with no end in sight. What's up with all that?
What a jerk. Answer that in 25 words or less.
Yeah. You know, at this point, it's kind of a mindset. The guys there haven't beat Ohio State, and until you do, you don't really know what it takes to win. And it's a huge, huge mountain that we have to climb. And, you know, there's not one thing about it that gets them over the hump, but you got to find a way to win one of these games and get back on track. But, I mean, but you can also look at quarterback play. You know, for almost a 20-year stretch in the 90s and 2000s, Michigan had a stud quarterback under center, an NFL-type guy that could go on the road or make big plays when he needed to. And I think, you know, in that area, we haven't had a lot of playmakers when it comes to that in the last 4 or 5 years.
In Drew, Danny McLean again, in retrospect, would you have rather just forgot about baseball and done football? Because I can't imagine playing two sports as competitively as you did. And, you know, you're working 12 months a year, but to play football and baseball right on top of each other, man, I'm going to tell you, that's a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. And it got to the point after my third year where I really hadn't had more than a day off since I graduated high school. My body was starting to break down. I broke my foot before the season started. And I felt like I needed to make a decision that off season. And whether it was to negotiate a trade back to the Yankees or go in the NFL draft or come back for the senior season, I felt like I kind of needed to make a decision that time. Now, 20 years removed, you know, looking back, I think patience was never my virtue. If you look at my track record, it was always do this, not the next thing, instead of either trusting the process or just enjoying the process and understanding 12 months later or things are going to happen as they're supposed to. So looking back, I mean, to answer your question, I wish I just would have been a little bit easier with the timetable on myself and played that fourth year and then had a decision make. Then, you know, everything still would have been there for me.
Yeah, after your junior year, you were, you know, could have come back for your senior year, obviously, and you decided to go to baseball. You were talking about when the Heisman Trophy might be the number one pick in the draft. And everybody was fascinated, though, with your arm because of the way you threw the ball, both in baseball and football. Listen to this. You played at Michigan. You played the whole season in 2000 when Tom left. You had a rocket arm. And listen to some of these quotes. It was well noted by a lot of the men in the broadcast booth.
Henson to throw. Throws a shot to Terrell. Man, he's got a gun.
Henson rolling. He plays with so much poise. Look at the zip on that throw. Out to Walker for a first down.
Henson plenty of time. Waits and fires deep. Got a man open. Terrell, did he make the catch? He did. Had to keep a foot in, and he got it down at the 21-yard line.
Only a strong-arm baseball-type quarterback could have gotten that ball there.
That was a long throw.
Across the field.
That was Bob Greasy. So certainly you couldn't get away from the fact that people looked at you as playing both. So you're saying in retrospect that you wish that you'd have maybe played your senior year and let that play out. And I think you also said later when the Yankees let you go in 2003 that maybe instead of going back to football, which you did, you played parts of 5 seasons, maybe you should have stayed with baseball a little bit longer. So hindsight is 20/20, obviously, but you've had obviously plenty of time to think about all this, and I hate even bringing it up. But that you also doubted that maybe you should have stuck with baseball a little bit longer.
I think that, you know, patience has never been my strength. I've worked on it and I'm better at it now. You know, when you have timetables in your head that, you know, I'm 21 and I just am led very, you know, for the first time, a full-time baseball player. Even though I was progressing, like the guys have been playing year round, and I was in AAA, the youngest guy in the league, and I break my hand. And then I'm 22 and I'm expecting myself to be an all-star. And I'm, still, you know, looking back, still trying to develop my approach at the plate, facing veteran pitching, all those things that were coming along in regards to how many at-bats and experience I had. But for me, you know, sometimes, you know, it was just, I was supposed to be in New York then, and if it wasn't, I was getting frustrated. And playing in Columbus with Ohio State fans around 24/7 isn't a great atmosphere to have a whole lot of fun either.
Drew, to that point, I mean, I don't think anybody questions your decision because there were about 17 million reasons to go the Yankee route. I totally get that. But I always wondered what you made about the rumor that Steinbrenner's an Ohio State guy. He went there. He wanted to pay you anything to get you out of Michigan so you wouldn't be the quarterback your senior year.
Because you did beat Michigan. I mean, you did beat Ohio State your junior year. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was more of a byproduct, you know, just a good anecdote. I don't know, maybe someone in the back of his mind, it didn't hurt, you know, it didn't hurt his feelings at all to do that. But, you know, his was the Yankees first and foremost, you know, that was his baby and his passion. So it was always Yankees first. But, you know, he was a football guy. He liked the football mentality, he liked players that had played football and approached the game aggressively in that way. So, you know, from day one, he was great to me and did a number for me and my family.
Drew, this is Denny McLean again. Did you enjoy, just a little bit away from what we're talking about, but did you enjoy doing all the paperwork as a scout? In other words, every action in a game is relevant, right? And how do you track everything? Because every time there's a pitch or a play, nine guys are moving. How the hell do you track all of it?
It's a lot like playing a football game. I mean, you have a lot going on at once. You're sitting behind the plate and you got the pitcher. You might have a man on first and you're trying to get his time to the plate. And you're also trying to get times to first. You're getting the pitch, the location, maybe hit a spot, movement, and then the ball is put in play. And the ball may be hit to the left center field, and you're looking at the right fielder to see if he backs up. I mean, there's so many things you're trying to take in, and you got your iPad in front of you making notes with your pen on there. It's pretty fun, and then you decipher it and write the report up. And, you know, the same way I just love breaking down film on the football side. It's always been something I've enjoyed is the details of it and trying to find the guys and project what they'll be down the road.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. Drew, I'm sure that you've done a lot of this in your life. I wonder if you still do it, lie awake in bed at night, thinking to yourself, how could I not have made it in the pros?
I don't look at it that way. You know, for a few years, I was frustrated just because I didn't accomplish. I didn't play as long as I wanted to. And at the end of the day, I love to play. I love to compete. And that's the one thing I don't have a great taste in my mouth because at the end of the day, I'm a gym rat. I love to be out there competing with your teammates. Money and fame and success, all that's a byproduct of it, but I miss playing the game, and I still do. It's a part of my life, and I'm always going to be a part of baseball or football, hopefully, till I die. I mean, I've looked into things outside of sports, but nothing fulfills that need that I have, like being out there on the field. So, and then one thing just to bring back around to, you know, my decision to leave baseball. My whole life, I'd always played baseball in the spring and football in the fall and always had my fix in both. And it wasn't until I did not have football in my life, playing quarterback, being in the middle of all that, leading an offense on the field, those things I didn't have in baseball. And that's when I realized most that's what I missed. And that's, I missed being athletic, you know, four at bats and three ground balls a game. I missed being hit and I missed some things in football that I didn't know until it was gone.
I read an interview you did three or four years ago, and you said, I like being a baseball player. You said the training of the baseball side is much more enjoyable than football. Hitting ground balls, just the act of practice, being on the field is fun. In football, you're kind of lifting and you're running. I hadn't thought of it that way, but because I always thought that baseball training was tedious. But you're saying that you just like the pace, and there was something about being a baseball player that was more appealing to you than being a football player, even though you were great at both.
Yeah, you know, and you're splitting hairs, you know, here for me as far as, you know, the differences between the two. Baseball is fun. You go out there, you take ground balls, you take batting practice, and you're doing everything on the field, and you're playing each day. But from an emotional and adrenaline sense, that lead up and then having it all on one day, whether it's Saturday or Sunday, you don't quite get that same rush on the baseball.
Hey, you know, I'm watching all these football highlights. And there have been a lot of great number ones at Michigan. There was Anthony Carter before you. There was Braylon Edwards after you. I'd forgotten about David Terrell, but he was your favorite target. He was number one. What a hell of a receiver. I don't know what happened to him. So you obviously had a great relationship with him. And do you still talk? Who are your former Michigan teammates that you still stay in touch with?
Well, you know, you're usually closest to the guys from your recruiting class that you all came in together and were in the dorms and study table and spent all the time with. So most of the guys in that class of 98 and the class of 97 before us. But, you know, your Benny Joprews, Dave Terrells, Cato Junes, you know, Larry Fitz down here in Tampa coaching linebackers for the Bucs. A lot of those guys from our class that were either on text chains or we'd see each other coming back to games. And then every few years, there's usually a reunion of the whole team. So, you know, this day and age, it's easier to keep in touch by text and Instagram and know what's going on with each other's lives.
Yeah. Are you still in touch with Lloyd? And what was he like to play for? And what was your relationship like?
Lloyd, Coach Carr was the best. You know, he had such a great personality, balance of discipline, compassion, and leadership. You know, a mentor that I'm just so thankful that I was able to have. You know, there were times that he got on me big time when I needed to, when he needed to. He was put in a tough situation, no doubt, the situation in 99. But, you know, again, I couldn't say any more about Coach Carr and what he's done as a leader and a mentor for me in my life. And I check in with him here and there, let him know what I'm up to, and I know he always enjoys catching up with his players because just like my father is a retired coach, talking to those guys and keeping up their lights helps keep them young.
As we talk about both sports, I hear a little bit more giddy up in football than baseball. Has anybody ever come to you and offered you a job as a head coach or an assistant in college, at least college?
Well, this is what I've been doing for about the last year and a half. You know, after going through everything with the Yankees and I really enjoyed it, I still want to work for an NFL club. And so I've been cultivating relationships around the league with front offices and general managers and having them get to know me. I was in camp with the Steelers last fall. For 2 weeks, they have an internship program, so I got to know all those guys and their organization, and then I volunteered for Charlie Strong here in South Florida, just doing some advanced scouting and making notes for them each week. And then I was down to the Senior Bowl as a group leader. So after this draft, when the scouting season turns over, I got a good feeling I'll hook up with one of these clubs, providing the country can get healthy and get through this virus.
Yeah. Last thing I have for you, you know, adversity is the great teacher. You've been through so much. I keep on thinking you should be able to talk to young players. You must have a message from them. They all have the thoughts that you had when they were young and the experiences that you had, which was that it didn't turn out the way you expected it to, ought to be a lot of great life lessons. What do you tell young players to keep them looking positive, believing in themselves, but also trying to be realistic about what pro sports is all about? I would think you'd have a great message for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to control what you can control. And that's no matter what sport or whatever business you're in. You know, the key is to focusing on what you're doing on a daily basis to improve yourself and be the best that you can be. My opportunity in the NFL was short. One half of one game, essentially. Other guys get more. Some of those things are out of your control, but all you can do is put your nose to the grindstone and work and try to stay positive. But, you know, I tell everyone I meet, make the best decisions you can with the information you have at that time and then move on with your life. Keep going with your life. Keep moving forward.
Eli, I got one more. This is my last question for Drew Henson today. I wanted to follow up my question about Lloyd Carr with this. When was the last time you were in contact with Tom Brady? Are you guys close at all, or did your competition at Michigan kind of ruin your relationship?
No. We were great. We kept in touch. I mean, we crossed paths over the years when I was playing. It's been a few years. I don't have his current number now, but Tom was always great and supportive to me. You know, nobody knows what's going on in a competition in a situation like that, except for the guys that are in it. And I know it made me a better player. You know, Tom was a leader and a captain on our team. Like, watching him as an older guy and how he worked and his intelligence and how he approached his business, you know, did a lot for me as I grew in my football career. And I hope me pushing him, you know, he moved on and had those situations. And I hope, you know, that was a contributing factor to his success. So, you know, I'm sure I'll see him down here in Tampa. To try to grab his new number. That thing's kind of hard to get.
Yeah, I guess so.
but no, I mean, I can't wait to talk to him. And just that Tom's still playing, you know, in his 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And we're all in different stages of our life, and he's getting ready for another season. It's awesome. It's great to see.
Physically, how do you feel now? I mean, are you you in still pretty good shape physically?
Yeah, I have some back issues, some disc issues in the lower back from rotational stuff from all those years, you know, lifting and then swinging and throwing some lower back. But overall, you know, like you said, I didn't take a ton of hits. My head's great. You know, shoulders are good. But
that's great.
But on that, in that respect, you know, that my body's healthy.
Good for you. I mean, we hear so many bad stories.
Yeah, congratulations on making the Michigan Baseball Hall of Fame. Hopefully that's supposed to happen in August and still does. We'll see. Great honor, and thanks for joining us, Drew. Really great catching up with you again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on, guys, and hello to all the Michigan fans out there.
You got it.
Okay. Drew, thank you. Have a great day.
Vincent, yeah.
What a nice guy. Seems to have handled what happened to him fairly well. But yeah, you know, guys, one of the biggest point that I got out of the interview, I thought he said something really interesting. So why can't Michigan beat Ohio State? Because these guys have never beaten Ohio State. They have no confidence. They don't really believe, essentially, is what he said, that they can beat Ohio State, and that won't change until they do beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
How about coaching? How about coaching and talent and recruiting? And those three count at all?
Yeah.
You know, many careers and poorly. You're like I said in the beginning of the show, yours ended poorly. So many do.
Sure.
It's hard to really relate to what it was like for him to at age 28 to have struck out in two sports. He only got one hit in baseball. The Yankees gave up on him. He only got one touchdown pass in football and one start, and all that talent, all that hope. But it sounds like he's come through it okay. He's not the first one to suffer a career end before he thought his time was up, but he's handled it quite well.
And I think something was very positive here. He had no regrets. I mean, I didn't hear any real regrets. I didn't hear anything downside wise. I mean, I think he came out of it pretty good.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. We're going to continue to do this show. Thank you. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We'll see you again on Monday.
Thursday.
Thursday.
Is this Monday today?
Today's going to be Monday all day.
Get out of the house, Eli.
Doesn't one day just blend into the next? I don't know what the hell's going on. And we'll see you again.
And don't forget again, Pete Vesey's coming on with us on Thursday.
And Mark, thanks for producing us today. I saw you talking with Drew there for a couple of minutes before we say goodbye. Thanks for dialing him up, and we'll see you all again on.
And don't forget Thursday. Brandon.
And Brandon, hanging in there. Thank you, Brandon, too. This Skype thing is wild. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.